Yeah. Can I get a Decca? Yeah. Dang, Alvin. Welcome to the jungle. Unbelievable. Nice to have you here. What's going on? My name is Jim Rome. You are in the jungle. I am live in Southern California. Hope you're having a good day. Hope you're ready for the weekend. Let's make sure we go strong. You always have my word. Every single day, but especially on Friday, leave it all out there. Today's you will feel Friday. Much better about anything you do on Friday.
Today's Friday.
Today is Friday. Yesterday was Thursday. Tomorrow is Saturday. Friday. Then it's Sunday. Then it's
Today's
Monday. And then we're
Friday.
On to Cincinnati.
Today is Friday.
Listen, what I'm saying to you is I'm looking for you to step it up. You have my word. You have my personal word, my personal guarantee, and the guarantee of the XR4TI that we will be ready to roll every single day, but especially on Friday. Not only does the grind include Friday, but you will feel so much better about anything you do on Friday night if you go hard on Friday. So I'm asking you clones to step it up, make it better. 1-800-636-8686. 1-800-636-8686. You can also email the program, Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveitake.com. You can follow me on social media, on Twitter, at Jim Rome. The show sets up like this. You got a whole lot of me. I've got thoughts on the NLCS and the situation the Dodgers find themselves in right now. The ALCS, come to find out, is not over. It looked like it was over, but it's not. And I will have thoughts on those two things. It is a Friday, so we have big head bets. James Kelly is coming up in hour number two. So if you want to get paid, if you want to be entertained, we will have that for you. That's in the second hour. In terms of the interviews themselves, coming up next segment, I've got a cornerback with the Pittsburgh Steelers, Steven Nelson, coming up in hour number three. Troy Reeder, a linebacker with the Rams, also in hour number three. Richard Jefferson, an ESPN NBA analyst, also in hour number three. Alvin's Ionic week that was.
Ionic.
And an ATP. So, a very, very busy Friday. Let's get at it, starting with... Wow. The NLCS, the MacBook Pro just made a sound that it's not supposed to make. That sound, have you ever heard that? Have you ever had your laptop just go dead on you, and before it goes dead, it goes, phew. That's what happened. Anyway. After beating LA. Wow. After beating LA put on Atlanta in game three. Remember that absurd 15-3 beating? There were a whole lot of Dodger fans who were feeling pretty good about themselves. A little too good, come to find out. Because as well as Game 3 went, Game 4 was an unmitigated disaster. It was a catastrophe. And it was the same catastrophe that Dodger fans have been having for years now. Clayton Kershaw pitches pretty well, but is left in a little bit too long. The bullpen cannot hold a lead, and the bats go silent when it matters most. In other words, wash, rinse, repeat. You can set your watch to it. And that's exactly what happened again last night. After beating the ever-living crap out of Atlanta's Kyle Wright in Game 3, the Dodgers then faced Bryce Wilson. Now, if you're not familiar with Bryce Wilson, it's because you shouldn't be. He had pitched less than 43 innings in his entire major league career. He hadn't even pitched since September 27th. And yet, Bryce Wilson is out there looking like Cy freaking Young last night. The Dodgers managed one hit against him. One. It was a home run by Edwin Rios. That's it. Six innings. The guy allows one hit. He strikes out five. So while Kershaw takes the loss for the game and does deserve some of the blame for the sixth, he would have had to have been perfect to leave that game with a lead. The Dodgers go from putting up 15 runs in three innings to getting a single hit in the first six and a total of three hits for the entire game. Atlanta, on the other hand, was having that proverbial brawl at the bat rack. And to that question of whether Ronald Acuna Jr. and Marcell Ozuna were going to wake up, the answer was most definitely yes. In the affirmative.
Wake up.
Acuna went 2-for-4 with a couple of runs scored. Ozuna went legend. The big man hit into a double play in his first at bat, and then all he did after that was cause damage, extreme damage. There was this in the fourth.
Here's the guy the Braves got to get going. Monster year this year. That is a blast. Way out of here. This ball game is tied. And a couple of stops along the way around the bases for Marcell Ozuna. He said they had to get him going. That thing got out of here in a blink.
Yeah, that thing is still going. That tied the game at one. And I'm not sure what was more electric. Ozuna's home run, Ozuna's trip around the bases, or Acuna's celebratory leap. He looked like MJ in his prime on that jump. My man must have had like a 90-inch vert. And then came the sixth. And that's the one that's going to be burned in the memories of Dodger fans for years to come. Because there have been a lot of innings like this over the past few postseasons. Kershaw had been pitching pretty well to that point. He had given up only that one run. And he had thrown just 71 pitches in the first five innings. He set down the last five hitters he had faced. But Acuna reached on the slow ground ball. He went to second on an error. And Dodger fans had to know. I mean, had to know what was going to happen next. And it started with Freddie Freeman.
So Acuna is going to go down to second on the error by Kike Hernandez. And Freeman has a chance to put Atlanta on top for the first time tonight. Hard hit, base hit. And Atlanta will take the lead. Digging around third, Acuna. Digging into second, Freeman. The two switch spots. And it's 2-1 Atlanta here in the sixth.
So on the one hand, it's 2-1. And you're thinking this is manageable. But then again, you know the Dodgers, and they've been here before. And what 2-1 meant was the nightmare was just getting started. You knew how this was going to end. With Kershaw walking off the mound a little bit too late, the bullpen making it a whole lot worse, and the bats not picking them up. And that's exactly how that went, because that's exactly how it always goes with these guys. Let's go to the tape. After the Freeman double, Ozuna stepped in, preparing to get his third look at Kershaw.
3-2 pitch. That's into left center field. Another run. Driven in by Ozuna. Cruising in the second. Another double. It's 3-1 Atlanta on top in the sixth.
Right.
That double by Marcell Ozuna knocks out Clayton Kershaw.
Right. 3-1 Atlanta. Dave Roberts comes to get Clayton Kershaw. Now, I know a lot of you are going to want to hang all of this on Kershaw. But before you do, check yourself for a minute. Quick, what is Kershaw's ERA in his last five postseason starts, including last night? What is it? 7? 9.5? 40? No, it's 3.94. 3.94. Now, not nearly as good as he is in the regular season, but not the utter disaster that everybody always makes him out to be. In fact, there are a ton of starting pitchers who would happily sign up for a postseason ERA of 3.94. It's just that Kershaw is so much better in the regular season. And again, while he was in the game, the Dodgers' bats managed all of one hit. Even if he did pitch like regular season Kershaw, he's not winning that game. So while he has to wear some of that, there is a lot of blame to go around. It's not all his fault. Should he have been yanked earlier? Was it a mistake to let Ozuna see him for a third time, especially when you consider how that second at bat went? Yeah, all right. All right, let's talk about that for a minute. Did you see what the bullpen did after Kershaw did leave? You can kill Dave Roberts for not going to his bullpen earlier, but given the arsonists that were posted up there, can you blame him? Did you see what happened when he ultimately did turn it over to those gas cans? Brewstar Gratterall replaced Kershaw. BG entered the game, having not allowed an inherited runner to score in the postseason. He went from that to letting everybody score. He gets a line out from his first batter, then he gives up a single, then an RBI double, then an RBI single, then he left the game. He threw 15 pitches, and he gave up three runs, plus the one that he inherited from Kershaw. So you're starting to see why Dave Roberts would rather let Kershaw try and work out of it than let his bullpen set the entire stadium on fire. It was 6-1 by the time Gratterall left. And it didn't end there. Victor Gonzalez comes in. He issues a walk and an RBI single. That makes it 7-1. And then finally got a couple of outs. a complete and total disaster. As before, if the bullpen had been able to keep it at 3-1, the Dodgers were not out of that game. You keep it to a 2 or even a 3-run game, and you keep the pressure on the Braves. You force them into tough decisions. You make them use up their important arms in the bullpen. Instead, this crew took a bad situation and made it so much worse. And you take all the pressure off the Braves. You use water to put out a fire, not gasoline. Remember all that talk about how deep and how good that Dodger bullpen was? Remember how their only concern was Kenley Jansen? Because they had that great and deep bullpen. Yeah, well, that bullpen allowed 15 runs in 15 2/3 innings in this series. Man, that's not a bullpen. That's batting practice. And if the Dodger pitchers were looking for the Dodger hitters to bail them out, then they were begging. Mookie Betts, 0-4. Corey Seager, 0-4. Cody Bellinger, 0-3. A lineup loaded with all-stars and MVP candidates, and they couldn't even scratch out a hit. And it's not like that was one bad night either. They were crap offensively in games 1 and 2 as well. Bellinger is hitting .188 for the series. Betts, even worse at .143. The offense that was unstoppable in the regular season has been unstartable in this series. Like, you take out the last three innings of Game 2's loss and the first three of Game 3's win, and these guys have been horrible. You take out those six innings, and they have scored a total of 3 runs in 30 innings. 3 runs total. Meanwhile, Marcell Ozuna continued to square up everything that came his way, and then he did this in the seventh.
Fourth pitcher of the night for the Dodgers, Dylan Floro, and there's one into center. Back at the wall, and it is gone. Ozuna, his second of the night, and the Braves get that run right back.
Right, and then this dude was still pounding in the eighth.
Ozuna has already had a big night. He's going to add to it with a base hit in the center. Another run is on the board, and it's a 10-2 ball game here in the
10-2. That made it 10-2 and capped off the complete and total humiliation of the Dodgers. Winning a playoff game 15-3 is impressive, but losing one 10-2 24 hours later in a must-win game with your ace is pretty much amazing. And now they're in a 3-1 hole, staring at the end of the season and a hell of a lot of criticism. They've gone into the tank before, but never like this. Because it was only like 5 minutes ago that we weren't asking will they win it all, but rather will they go down as the best Dodgers team ever when they win it all. And now they're one loss away from this question. Is this the biggest implosion and the biggest disappointment ever for this franchise? And if they show up anything like they did last night in Game 5 tonight, then it is a resounding yes. Because right now, this is an absolute unmitigated catastrophe. D-Rod in the 925 starts off a reaction by tweet. Kershaw, gonna Kershaw. Hey, look, I made this point. They needed more from him. He needed to do even better than he did. But this one is not all on him. Where were their bats? They got nothing going offensively. And then if your argument again is, what's Dave Roberts doing? What's he thinking? How does he not get this guy out of there? What you saw what happened when he did get him out of there. He knew what kind of arsonists he had up in that bullpen. At Wooden Laconic tweets, Bryce Wilson was the one pitching like a 3-time Cy Young Award winner last night, while Clayton Kershaw eventually locked into Clayton Kershaw playoff mode, just like we knew he would. Wore the Dodgers out clippering the Clippers this year. Dude, Wilson, man, tip your hat. That dude is a gamer. A gamer. He was unbelievable. Johnny Scabs tweets, Jimmy, I thought for sure Kershaw would win a game in October, signed Y2K. Hey, listen, again, he has not been at his best in the postseason. He's been much better in the regular season. I'm not saying that the narrative isn't there. I'm not saying that some of that's not deserved. I'm saying it's not all his fault. At Mock Moda tweets, hell yeah, Rome. I'm backed in the dugout, powdered up, slumped forward, staring at the ground. Signed, October Kershaw.
Don't forget Mock Moda.
24 other dudes in there who didn't do their job. He's not the only one. 1-4-3. See, one tweets, Jim, of course Kershaw came up short in the playoffs. Signed, death, taxes, and Ike telling Garth Brooks stories.
It's lit.
Who was going to win that game when the team behind him had one hit in six innings? Not Kershaw, not Koufax, not Cy Young, nobody. Where were the bats? And how about that bullpen? When they needed the bullpen to keep it close, those arsonists came out with their gas cans and their blue tips, and they did what they've done of late. They burned that stadium to the ground. And the Braves are just better. Just better. All right, other topics. Le'Veon Bell goes to Kansas City. Let's get into that. The ALCS. Astros, not dead, can't quit. Man, they're still right there. They were down 3-0, and they're still very much alive, looking at Game 6 now. So the Rays are not where they want to be with them. We will get into that. Big head bets coming up next hour. But when we come back, Steven Nelson of the Steelers joins us. That's next. 1-800-636-8686. And hour number two is wide open.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Right back at it. I am Jim Rome. What's going on? Such a good Friday to you. Nice to have you. All right, as promised, we are joined right now by a cornerback for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He is coming off an enormous game against Philadelphia. He had six tackles. He had two passes defended. He had two INTs. 14 tackles and those two interceptions for the season. 16.1 coverage snaps per reception last season, which was sixth best in the NFL. He was the 98th pick overall in 2015 out of Oregon State. The Steelers are 4-0. They're in first in the AFC North, and they've got a big one at home against Cleveland Sunday. That is a CBS game. My guest is Steelers corner Steven Nelson. Steve, it's good to have you on the show. How are you?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. I'm doing great.
Good, good. Hey, listen, I know you're focused on the Browns and that challenge. I'm going to get to that in 1 minute, but I mentioned you had a huge game against Philadelphia. Can you take me back to Sunday first? What was your mindset going into that game, and did you know you had something special in you?
Right, man. Just going into that game, man, that whole week of preparation, man, you know, I just pretty much had a chip on my shoulder. Going into it, man, I was working hard all week. Trying to get the guys to rally, man, and we knew we had a, you know, big time opponent coming in, and you know, I always bet on myself, so I knew, you know, what I was capable of, man, and you know, the Chiefs finally, you know, came through for me.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned you had a chip on your shoulder, and when you look at that secondary, something that you and some of the others have talked about is you all feel like you're underdogs. You all feel like you've got a collective chip on your shoulder. Where does that attitude come from, and then how powerful is that when you've got a bunch of guys in that same secondary that have that mentality?
Right. And that mentality is just something that, you know, the Steelers defense has had historically. You know, just, you know, go out there and, you know, make big plays and, you know, all rally to the ball, you know, that same camaraderie like you've seen on the past Steelers defenses, man. You know, it's just something that, you know, organizations, that, you know, that's instilled in us. And to answer your question, man, about, you know, everybody in the secondary with that net, you know, to be great, you know, and feel like underdog. I think that's special, you know, to have everybody on the same page and, you know, want to, you know, be a playmaker each and every game.
Steven Nelson joining us. You know, the people who know, however, as an example, Pro Football Focus had you as a top 10 cornerback in the NFL last season, and your numbers stack up really well against the other guys who are Pro Bowlers. So do you feel like you're starting to get the respect that you deserve, or do you feel like people are still sleeping on you?
Yeah, people still sleeping on me, man. But, you know, it just comes with the territory. You know, I haven't had enough splash plays. And I recognize that, and it seems like, you know, that's what it's about. You know, you don't get splash plays, and you don't get the recognition, you know. So, you know, that was my whole motto coming into this season, was to make a lot more splash plays than I had last season, even though last year, you know, I didn't really give up, you know, too much. But, you know, when it all counts, I mean, at the end, when it comes to, you know, the stats and all that kind of stuff, you know, they look at the splash plays over everything.
See, the thing about that is, though, you can't make those plays. You can't make those splash plays if they're not testing you. For instance, last season, you didn't get a whole lot of chances for interceptions because teams were not going your way. Instead, it was Joe Hayden who got the INTs. So teams, if they're not throwing at you, it's a sign of respect. But is there a part of you that wants to say, hey, man, can you test me? I can't make a play if you don't come at me.
Yeah, man. It's just part of the game, man. You know, you just got to, you know, be patient and wait your turn, man. That's what I learned in this league, man. You know, things don't, you know, happen when you want them to. They just kind of happen, you know, as time goes on. You know, like last week, I got two interceptions. You know, I went into the game, you know, I always wanted to make a big play, but it's like I'm not going to beat myself up about it, you know, to the point where if I don't make a big play, you know, I get down on myself. You know, you just got to, you know, certain things have to just come to you, you know what I mean?
Exactly right. You can't force it. You can't force that kind of thing. You have to wait for it to come to you. Steven Nelson joining us. You know, when you signed with Pittsburgh, you touched on this. There's this great, great Steeler tradition, especially defensively. Over the years when I've done this, Steve, I've talked to so many guys, and they all talk about it. When you signed with Pittsburgh as a free agent in 2019, what was it about the opportunity there that appealed to you so much? Why did you like that fit?
Man, I was Steelers fan just because of the defense. I always like, you know, the way they play, their physicality on the defensive side of the ball. And just also, you know, just looking at, you know, what they had, you know, the type of talent that they had. You know, we don't even got to talk about it. We got a lot of great guys up front rushing. You know, we got great guys in the secondary. So, you know, I just saw like a good fit for me to come in and, you know, play a role in the defense.
You know, it's one thing for you to see the fit. It's another for them to approach you the way they did. And what I mean by that is this is not a franchise that normally goes out and makes big signings in free agency. So what did it mean to you that they targeted you and they made you a big offer?
It meant a lot, man. You know, my agent kind of explained that, and I was actually, you know, surprised. Like, wow, I don't really know the history of stuff like that. You know, so, you know, I'm just very blessed and, you know, fortunate that, you know, these guys, you know, saw, you know, something that in me to come out and help this team.
Steven Nelson joining me for another moment or so. And then, of course, you got the Browns coming to your place on Sunday. That is a big game. As you look at the film and you get ready for that game, what is the number one key to slowing them down?
Definitely stopping the run. They do that very well. They got, you know, a plethora of good running backs on the offensive side of the ball, man. So, definitely stopping that run game, you know, can be good for us.
Steelers 4-0 on the year. They're in first in the AFC North, and they've got a big one. They're at home against Cleveland on Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern, CBS game. Steelers corner, Steven Nelson, our guest. Steve, great to have you on. Thanks so much. Good luck. Good to talk to you. Great talking to you too, Van Smack. That's a good player. That's a really good player. It's a really good player, and we kind of battled through that connection, but I appreciate that. Appreciate the Steelers. Appreciate him. That's Steven Nelson. All right, so let me set up the rest of the program for you, too. Love that game. Steelers-Browns. And you know where I come out on America's team. This is a significant test for them. I wonder about Baker Mayfield. He looked a little dinged in that game last week. We'll see how he comes out of it. Also, the fact that Odell Beckham went out yesterday was not a great sign, but we'll see. A real barometer game for them. Something else I want to talk about. Well, to say that I want to talk about it is not really accurate, but I will. There is a poll on the rattiest cities in America. It's a thing. Cities with the biggest rat infestations. And when that story first dropped, of course, you were all up in my mentions. Hey, Rome, now is the time to bring back the family. Look at the rankings of the rattiest cities in America. Look how many are in your home state, Rome. It's time to bring back the family. There isn't a single story anywhere or a single infestation anywhere. There's nothing anywhere that will bring the family back, all right? It's just not coming back. However, I will run down the rankings, and in so doing, I have to admit, off the air, I took a little trip down memory lane, and I found some sound from back in the day when the family was a thing. Let me tell you, I just hope you were listening back then, man. There was some good radio back in the day. This is still a really good show, but you won't believe how great this show was back then. when you could just talk about people who look like rats and put them in the family. And every single week we had new members of the family. Good times. To quote my son, Logan, good times. So, yes, clones, I am well aware of the story ranking the rattiest cities in the country. And that four of them are in my state of California. I will try and get to that before the end of the program. Additionally, I've got an appearance on the NFL and CBS on Sunday. I've got my topics. I've got my rants. I'm ready to roll. In addition to that, the reason I bring that up, one, I want you to know about it. Two, one or two of those games will be covered by the big head, James Kelly. His numbers are incredible. I think, if I'm not mistaken, for the season in the NFL against the spread for entertainment purposes only, James Kelly on this show is 13-6-1, I think. If we were using real dough, you would have made real dough. James Kelly's coming up at 10:20, I think. Troy Reader in hour number three. Richard Jefferson in hour number three. And now I'm looking for one of you to step it up. How about a phone call? You know what would be cool on a Friday? How about a golden ticket? I haven't given out one of those in a long time. 1-800-636-8686. Brown Steelers, who you got? Packers, Bucks, who you got? Dodgers, Braves, who you got? Let's get you a sports update. It is the bottom of the hour after all. Here is the latest.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Every single Friday, we do the Ask the Pros. And almost every single Friday, Bella B asks me a question. Who is it going to be today? ATP. Send me a question at cbssportsradio.com/askthepros. Listen later on. I might answer yours, but probably not. I'll probably answer hers. She's better at it than all of you. In the meantime, you want to thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, so on this Friday, I really want to get into the week that Houston has had. It's been a really interesting week for the Houston, the town thereof. The Astros, the Rockets, James Harden, his new shoes. Have you seen his new shoes? Every time there are new Harden kicks, Twitter goes crazy, and understandably so. Like, I'm not even sure, like, Adidas? At this point, is there somebody at Adidas who says, let's just come up with the ugliest shoe possible, and we'll push it out there? That'll be funny. I mean, these shoes are that ugly that you'd think that that was their plan. I will have that for you. And, you know, maybe against my better judgment, but then again, I've done this a long, long time. Then again, it is my name on the marquee. Then again, it is my show. Then again, what are they going to do? Take me out of the Hall of Fame? Watch this. Apparently, you're all ready for it anyway. At Hitman Canadian tweets, rattiest cities? Let me know. I've got some buddies coming over for dinner. Thanks, IRA. Mailman Casey tweets, Huntington Beach may not be the rattiest city in the U.S., but the biggest rat I know lives there. Unwar Narkbra.
Brah.
Nark.
Brah.
Nark.
Brah.
Nark.
Brah.
Rat.
Brah.
Nark. Rat.
Brah. Brah.
Snitch. Nark.
Brah.
Rat.
Brah.
Eric.
Brah.
Eric Nark.
Brah.
All right, so, I mean, I hate to even go here. It seems pretty early in the day to do so, however, and I can't believe that I'm going to say this, but it has been a very, very big year in this here jungle for rats. That, of course, is the band Rat with two T's. That's one of the ultimate buzzwords on this program. Rat with one T. The band has two T's. I don't really know the genesis or the origin of that band and why they felt like they needed two T's. I mean, why not have three? That doesn't look right. The artwork's not right. Just hang another T on there. I mean, nobody named their band Dog with two G's. At least they didn't flip that R around like corn. Anyway, it is one of the ultimate buzzwords on this show, rat. And many of you know why that is, but many of you do not. And if you want to talk about origin, it goes all the way back to the 1990s when we didn't have tweets. We didn't even have email. Back then, it was just a fax machine, literally a fax machine. And back in the day, when we had a really hot topic, you know, like Bobby Knight, Pete Rose, and this thing that I'm about to get to, a really good day, we could get several hundred faxes. Like the record was like 374 faxes in one day, and they'd come through one at a time. But there was never a fax like the one Gaucho Bill sent me. I'm not sure of the exact year. Early 90s? Gaucho Bill sends me a fax that reads in part, quote, "All I've seen in the local fish wrap lately are pictures of Monica Seles's rodent face contorting in a most heinous fashion as she prepares to pound the ball back at her horrified human opponent. Her mouth is agape, exposing her beaver-like chompers, while her beady black eyes are riveted on the ball. It's as though the rat girl thinks it's not a tennis ball she's striking, but a cheese ball. And the winner gets all she can eat." Yeah, I mean, that may be somewhat amusing to you right now, but I'm here to tell you that when that fax came through, I was crying. Like, I couldn't even read it on the air. I could not get it out. And I may be mistaken, but I think that's actually how the Rat Family started, with that actual fax. And the staying power of that fax cannot be understated, because it paved the way to the very unfortunate, very regrettable, but extremely unforgettable Rat Family, which I've been trying to scrub from the internet ever since. But as we all know, the internet is in ink. You can't scrub it. You can't. I mean, I'd like to live in a world where that never happened. You all want to live in a world, however, where it's still a thing every single day. Like, I used to literally have conversations like this with professional athletes back in the day about that particular family. Listen to this. This is a conversation I had with Mark Grace about the family in 1996.
Are you dialed into the Rat Family?
No, I'm not.
We have a new Rat Family in the jungle. Here are the goals for this year for Mark Grace. 100 runs batted in, 20 home runs, 330, gold glove, all-star appearance, and one glossary entry in the Rat Family.
And one glossary. I'll tell you what, Romy, my next jungle adventure, I'm going to have someone for an addition to the Rat Family for you. Romy, go hit on some fat chicks and bug off, all right?
This was the kind of conversation that we would have on this show. That was 1996. Me and all-star Mark Grace, and me explaining to him what the Rat Family was and his responsibility to add to it. So whenever any kind of story comes up that even references a rat, you clones are all over it. Like Selish on a cheese ball, as Gaucho Bill would say. So 2020 has been a big, big year for the jungle in terms of rats. The aforementioned Canadian hitman pointed this out. There was Silk Bra going rat bra,
bra,
with his tweet to the Huntington Beach Police Department. There was the San Antonio Zoo running a Valentine's Day promo where you could name a cockroach after your ex and then watch them feed it to a rat on a live stream. There was the rat hotline for the NBA bubble. There was the discovery that the St. Louis Cardinals had a utility man, Brad Miller, and his nickname is Rat. There was that giant lying rat, Charles E. Cheese, slinging cardboard pizza under the alias Pasquale's just to survive the pandemic. You know, that gigantic rat. All of these stories have been covered all right here because you all love rats. And you all love the Jungle Rat family. So naturally, when a list came out this week of America's rattiest towns, you were all up in my mentions, demanding a take. First, there is nothing lazier than list radio. It's even lazier than rat radio. Secondly, why would I run down a list of the rattiest cities in America? Who cares? Who wants to know that? Well, apparently Channel 13 in Sacramento does. Channel 13 in Sacramento is all over it. Not only that, but they seem kind of proud of the fact that they're working their way up the rat list.
Sacramento just moved up the list of rattiest cities in the United States. This study is from Orkin. Based on the rankings of number of rodent treatments it conducted over the past year, Sacramento landed at 36th on this list, moving up five spots from the year before. A pair of California cities actually made the top five in order. Those are Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, Washington, D.C., and San Francisco.
Slow news day? Come on, man. Who made the decision in the newsroom to flaunt moving up five spots on the list from 41 to 36? I mean, we're not exactly... Can I get my music, please? Thank you, Alvin. Don't be a rat. We're not exactly talking about NFL power rankings here. We're talking about the rattiest cities in America. And I'm a big Sacramento fan, but Cowtown seems pretty stoked to be moving up in the world as Rat Town. Now, personally, I am a little put off as a native Californian that there are so many California cities that are so freaking ratty. Like, I no longer live in L.A., but I was born in L.A. L.A. is number two ahead of New York. How the hell is that possible? I've been to New York. The rats operate the subways in that city. But apparently the Golden State is turning into the Rodent State. We're on that list four times. And no, this is not an invitation to remind me that Corey Pavin was born in California. I know. Nor do I know what his favorite cheese is. I don't care. Nor do you need to point out that Gary Gaetti played for the Angels at one point. I'm well aware of that. This is a current list of actual rats, not an old list of people who allegedly look like rats. I can't be more clear about that. This is an actual current list of real rats, not a totally outdated list of people who you think look like rats. So don't go trying to wedge in any references that bring me down to the hell in which you love to live in. Remember, this list is based on how many rat treatments that the company Orkin does every single year. You know what? It's actually an indictment on that company, Orkin. Come on, man. Up your poison game, Orkin. Knock these rats out my state. So I don't have to listen to local news reports about moving up the rat list. And how bad is it where you live if that's something you want to show off about? Damn, we're climbing that thing. Look how much higher we are on the list of rats this year than last year. You know how many more rats? You know how many more rats we have now than we did a year ago at this time? Man, we got to break the top 20. We got to break the top 20. Leave your garbage out. Garbage. Hang pictures of Pavin outside. If there's a rat list, you clones will find it. And then I'm going to have to spend part of my show trying to exterminate it. Do your job, Orkin. Do your job, Orkin, so I can do mine. Deal? Good. Deal. Your clone's happy. Family's not coming back. I've done... You can't even believe the amount of time I've spent trying to scrub that family from the internet. Because, by the way, a number of those rats are some of my best friends now. And some of those rats are just rats. Time and place, you know, we all kind of mature and evolve and grow, myself included. But I will say this, Gaucho Bill was so far ahead of his time. Not only is he responsible for one of the all-time radio bits ever, just that line in and of itself, beaver-like chompers. Hemingway wishes he came up with that. Shakespeare would give anything to be the guy to coin that. Jamie in Green Bay tweets, we need a Hall of Fame list of phrases that were said on the program. Get beaver-like chompers the first golden jacket. I cannot even begin to stress to you how amazing that fax was. I couldn't read it. I was crying. I've never laughed so hard at anything on this show in my life. It was incredible. It was the finest bit of prose I'd ever read in my life. And I always did really well in English. I was one of those guys that the math and sciences jackaled my head. I just couldn't deal. Chemistry, biology, algebra, geometry. Man, no matter how hard I worked that stuff, I couldn't figure it out. Just was not that guy. That side of my brain did not work. I was dominant, however, in English. Crushed everything on every level of my education with English. But what I would have given to compose that email, or check that fax. Gaucho Bill, it was brilliant. Beaver-like chompers was an amazing line. When we come back, just having a little fun on a Friday. Got a lot of NFL I want to get to. Richard Jefferson in the third hour. Rams linebacker Troy Reader in the third hour. This next hour does belong to you clones. You know what? What the hell? Do what you want with it. 1-800-636-8686.